17 seconds and counting. Guidance internal. 15, 14, 13, 12, 11, 10, 9. We have ignition sequence start. Engines on. 5, 4, 3, 2. All engines running.
Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are willing to postpone, and one we intend to win.
Okay, engine stop. ATA at a descent. Flight control mode auto, descent engine command override off. Engine arm on. 413 is in.
We copy you down, Eagle.
Houston, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
My guest on Cosmic Perspective Radio is amateur astronomer, planetary imager, and NASA volunteer Christopher Goh. Chris, welcome and thanks for joining us today from the Philippines.
Yeah, it's great to be with you.
Chris, you've been an amateur astronomer since the return of Halley's Comet in 1986, and you've done some remarkable astro imaging since then. How did you get started in the field of astronomy?
It's funny because during that time, there was no internet, so I had to learn everything by the book. And one thing interesting was that when I went to one of the super department stores here, there was an astronomy magazine. You know, getting that magazine basically started my route to astronomy because, you know, at first you thought that when you read textbooks, it's different when you read a magazine where you see other amateur astronomers doing astronomy, and you get to know which telescopes to buy from the ads. So it basically started my path into astronomy. You know, you go to the libraries, but in the Philippines, here, when we go to the libraries, we have books in the 40s, 50s. So in most cases, in those books, if you want to have a telescope, you have to build one. So I didn't know that when you get the magazine, you can just go to a store and order a telescope. It makes things a lot easier.
You discovered what was later called the Junior Red Spot on Jupiter. That must have been pretty exciting. How did that all happen?
I started planetary imaging in during the Great Mars Opposition. During that time, I had a smaller telescope, and I was just using the webcam. And when I started imaging planets, I realized that my location was one of the best places to image planets because, you know, being in the tropics with the planets so high, and with a nice wind from the sea, which stabilizes the atmosphere, it was great, and basically it helped me develop my love to imaging planets. And I started imaging Jupiter, monitoring the changes in Jupiter. And it's funny because during the discovery of Red Spot Junior, I actually overslept. I was supposed to image Jupiter at 4 a.m., but somehow I missed the alarm clock and didn't wake up till 5. But it was a fortuitous discovery because when I went out at 5, you know, it was just a few minutes before sunrise. When I took the image of Jupiter, lo and behold, the red oval BA was rising. So if I had woken up at 4 a.m., I would have missed the discovery.
It sounds like destiny, basically.
Well, I was lucky that day.
You've also done image processing with a Hubble Space Telescope images. Now, how does an amateur astronomer get use of the Hubble Space Telescope?
Actually, after my discovery of Red Spot Junior, I got invited by Imke de Potter to join her group. She's a professional planetary astronomer who works in Berkeley. She's actually a very famous astronomer. She wrote the textbook for planetary sciences, and I was invited to join her team. And from there, we got to use the Hubble Space Telescope many times. And from my contacts with professional astronomers, especially with my buddy Mike Wong, also works with Imke de Potter, Mike was able to work at the Space Telescope and Science Institute for a few months. So I was able to ask him to help image the quad transit of Saturn, you know, that big image of Saturn with four moons on it. It was part of the team that got that image. It's quite exciting for an amateur astronomer to be involved with the Hubble Space Telescope.
Yes, that's something that I would think would be a dream of many. What's interesting is today the public has a lot more opportunity to help scientists and do science. And of course, talking about Jupiter, just in a few days from now, the Juno mission to Jupiter will go into orbit around the largest planet in the solar system, and it's going to be using a suite of instruments. But one instrument is going to be very special to the public, called JunoCam. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
You know, the main mission of Juno is to probe the inside of Jupiter. This is something of a mystery for us because we really don't know anything about Jupiter. When I think about Jupiter, I'm reminded of that tale about 10 blind men and the elephant. They were trying to touch each part of the elephant, and you know, one touched the nose and say, "This is a snake." We're like that with Jupiter. We can see the clouds outside, but we don't know what's inside. So this is why this mission is so special. But one thing nice is that NASA added a camera for the public to get involved, and this is JunoCam. One thing about JunoCam is that it has a very narrow field of view. This is because of the orbit of Juno. It's basically going to hug the planet. It has to do that to be able to probe the inside. It's not like a probe like Galileo, which really orbits with the same orbit of the moon. This one is like the Earth satellites that we have, the weather satellites that we have. It's going to have an elliptical orbit, but its closest approach is going to basically be just a few hundred miles above the cloud deck of Jupiter. So it's going to be very close to Jupiter, in which case it's going to make very, very high resolution image of the clouds of Jupiter. The problem with the high resolution image is that the professional astronomers would need a wide view. Although we have Hubble, we have these observatories, the problem with professional planetary astronomers is that they can't get enough time with these instruments because they're also in competition with other branches of astronomy, like those who study stars, those who study galaxies, and all the other stuff in the universe. In the pecking order of things, basically planetary science is, when it comes to using observatories, we're down low, very low in the pecking order. So the professional astronomers would rely on the public, on amateur astronomers, to basically, number one, image Jupiter so they can get the big picture of what's going on in Jupiter. And secondly, once we amateurs are able to image Jupiter, you know, with a wider field, although with very, very high resolution, the public is invited to study these pictures and get to know with what's going on with Jupiter. So in this discussion, which is in the Juno mission website, there's going to be a discussion board there where people, the public, are invited to join in the discussion. And after that, the public is encouraged to vote on where the spacecraft is going to point in Jupiter. Because again, it's going to be a very narrow space on where JunoCam can point. And there's also a budget on how much data that JunoCam can show back to Earth. In fact, I was looking at the information. There's a limit of only 40 megabytes of data, image data, that is allowed by Juno for each close approach of Jupiter, which we call perigeum. So this is the third, the vote. And the last is, once the Juno team gets the image, it's going to be public immediately. So the public is encouraged to process those images. In a sense, this is a very public camera.
From what I understand, the spacecraft will take these very long elliptical orbits because of the radiation of Jupiter, so it won't destroy the instruments. Is that correct?
It cannot stay close to Jupiter. It's going to burn the electronics.
The JunoCam will take images from pole to pole as it orbits the planet. After the images are taken by JunoCam, when will we expect to see them here on Earth?
You have to bear in mind that we don't have a broadband connection to Jupiter. Jupiter is so far away that I think the dial-up is even faster. I think we're going to get less than a K per second. So it's going to take quite some time for the image to download from the spacecraft to Jupiter, because it's just going to use radio waves. And because of the distance of Jupiter and the power of the radio of that spacecraft, the bit rate of the data, it's going to just trickle in. It's just like, you know, remember with New Horizons, we get one image a day. It's because spacecraft is so far away, it takes a long time for the data to trickle down to Earth. And the same is true with Juno.
Yeah, I understand that it'll take the data and then store it and then turn it back towards the Earth. And I know that with the distance, we're talking quite a bit of time before the signal even gets here. And then, as you spoke about, this very slow data rate. So once this information comes in, though, the amateurs will have it, and they'll be able to study it, and they'll be able to pick what point to look at. Zach, that's correct?
Yes. One thing about the JunoCam, as I said, there was a budget on how much data it can transmit back to Earth. It cannot take everything that's on orbit. So this is kind of complicated, because the camera won't be pointing at Jupiter all the time, because not only is the spacecraft moving so fast into the planet, it's actually spinning 3 times a minute. And the camera is on one of the side of Juno.
I see.
So you can just think of it as the fan with the camera on the side. And as it rotates, it's going to take once every 3 minutes. So it can point its camera on Jupiter, you know, 3 times a minute as it moves.
It sounds like it's going to be very challenging.
You know, I've talked to the professional astronomers involved in it. They really don't know what's going to happen. So everything is up in the air. We're just crossing our fingers that, especially this July 4, when the spacecraft arrives, everything will go smoothly during what we call Jupiter Orbital Insertion, or JOI, on July 4. So it's the day when basically Jupiter captures the spacecraft and basically makes it orbit Jupiter.
And I think the really cool thing about this whole thing is that we don't know what we're going to find, and that's the excitement of exploration.
One thing about Jupiter, people might think, oh, it's so far away. Why the hell are we wasting money on this? You know, we learn a lot of things by studying the weather system of Jupiter. We learn about a lot of things when we study the inside of Jupiter, because what we theorize is that inside Jupiter, there might be metallic hydrogen. And we know that if ever metallic hydrogen exists, this will be a perfect conductor. So it's something that we can apply on Earth. So, you know, the spirit of exploration, we get to learn new things, which probably in the future we will apply to everyday life.
The study of other planetary systems certainly helps our understanding of the Earth's weathering system, as you say, and aurora. Jupiter has auroras.
Yes, Jupiter has auroras. And also the materials inside Jupiter. These are exotic materials that we might find use in the future.
And we're hoping to find maybe how the solar system began. You're going to be involved, of course, with the public, with the Juno Cam and the Juno mission. What will you be doing to help out?
Well, the first thing I'll be doing is imaging Jupiter. So I will be providing images so that the guys in Juno will know where to point or what they're looking at. I'm also encouraging people to teach them how to image planets. So I get to travel to different places in the world to teach them how to make the best out of their telescope system, their camera, so that they can get good images of Jupiter to support this mission.
And do great science.
Yeah, and do great science.
Which I think is a really great thing that just the average person, an amateur astronomer, even school children can get involved with deciding what pictures to take. This is a mission for not just for scientists, but for everyone.
Basically, NASA had this camera with the public involved to get people involved with science so that they understand how science is done. This is something that is very exciting for me, because we know, you know, for the future of the world, in many cases, in fact, there was an article in Business Week that said science create economies. So if you notice, a lot of things, the economy runs on technology now. So he who has the most efficient technology has a better economy. So in a sense that the more we get to know science, it improves our way of life.
Many things I know myself from being in the medical field, designed for planetary and space missions became great assets to us in our economy, and not just in our economy, but in the medical field.
Yeah, I know that because things like CAT scan, MRI, those were first used to basically probe planets using microwave radiation to basically dissect the planets. And we also have this thing called the mass spectrometer to determine what material is there. Before, it was used to basically, quote-unquote, smell what elements were in different planets. Now we're using it in material science to probe, let's say, you have an object, what's it made of? So we get a lot of things, but, you know, one of the biggest thing was, I remember the Apollo project where they had to make the computer small to fit into that spacecraft. And, you know, it started the age of microcomputers.
And I remember my first four-digit calculator weighed about 5 pounds.
That's true. And, you know, a lot of things we have in life right now, like that material we use, carbon fiber, were all discovered, you know, using the space program. When we try to develop new materials that are that will survive the rigors of space. So a lot of these came into development, and, you know, it makes life of people easier. It gives jobs to people to manufacture these things. So it goes a long way. And, you know, it comes from a single, simple research.
Yes, the advantages and technologies of space exploration have certainly benefited everyone and everything on this planet. I understand that you're going to be at the Mount Wilson Observatory to image Jupiter when Juno arrives.
Yeah, this is exciting because, again, with the camera of Juno, it's not going to have a great image of Jupiter. No, it's just going to have strips of images. So I've been asked to take an image of Jupiter as it goes to orbital insertion. So we're very excited with this. Again, we really don't know what's going to happen with Juno cam, but we're sure that we can make great images with the telescopes we have in Mount Wilson.
Well, this is pretty exciting. We'll hope for the best, and you know, NASA's had a very good track record, so I'm very confident that we'll get some sort of science. Maybe we're not sure exactly what we'll get, but we'll certainly get some great science.
You know, from the track record of the Mars rovers, you know, NASA really did a very good job. I remember those rovers, they say it's going to last for 3 months, and it's still running around now after over 10 years. It's amazing.
It is an amazing accomplishment of all the engineers, scientists, and everyone involved that helps make these missions possible. Chris, thanks for being with us today and being a part of making the Juno mission possible. A mission not just for scientists, but for everyone.
Yeah, I'm glad to be with you.
On July 4th, the Juno spacecraft performed the necessary engine burns to go into orbit around Jupiter and is now in its first orbit around the giant planet. For more information on the Juno mission and Juno cam, go to nasa.gov/Juno and missionjuno.swri.edu. Cosmic Perspective Radio is an Andy Poneros production.